Hi, I'm Jennifer Hillman, host of AIR, Abstract Illusion Radio, inviting you to come explore and get exposed to the different aspects and expressions of the healing arts on AIR every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Pacific Time on Station 1. With each breath of AIR, gain new insights and inspirations here on BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBSRadio.com, where the mind embraces the world and discovers the universe and beyond. BBSRadio.com.
Welcome and breathe in AIR, Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression. With your host, Jennifer Hillman.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening tonight. This is Jennifer Hillman, your host, and I'm very happy to have Lynn Terry on AIR today. Linda is a Fulbright scholar, keynote speaker, internationally known expert on social and emotional learning, conflict resolution, intergroup relations, and crisis intervention. She currently serves as a director of the Inner Resilient Program, also known as Project Renewal. This project is of the Tide Center and is an initiative to equip school personnel and with the skills and the strategies to strengthen the inner resilience of, in order to model these skills in young people in their care. Linda has more than 35 years in experience in the educational in a variety of levels. And with all that, there's more information you can get from her about her on www.casel.org. Hello, Linda, and today we're going to be talking to you about your book, Building Emotional Intelligence and its Techniques to Cultivate Inner Strength in Children.
Pleasure to be here.
And it has the introduction and practices guided by Daniel Goleman. I want to make sure to get in there because we will be playing a little bit of the practices later. Linda, you have an extraordinary background in education, and I just am really thrilled to have you on AIR today.
Well, it's just a pleasure to be here and talking about how to cultivate this inner strength in our children.
How did this book come about?
Well, as you may know, I think you've read the book, that
yes.
One of the things that happened after September 11th, 2001, and by the way, our offices are about 8 blocks from Ground Zero, we began to see how important it was for both young people and adults to really have this kind of inner strength available to them at any time, given the uncertainties of such things that could happen. And, of course, September 11th was an extreme example of that. But it led me to realizing that I needed to deepen the work that I was already doing in the field of social and emotional learning, which is really the field that helps both schools and homes strengthen what I would call emotional intelligence.
I want to add that this book really can help anyone, regardless
Absolutely.
Of your age, because it really just has some good basic foundations for everyone. But
well,
that's
you.
My opinion. How do you know when a child is coping poorly to stress?
Well, I think you begin to see some clear signs of that, and some of those signs I mentioned in my book, they clearly begin to show such impulsivity to their anger, to their feelings. They're not able to really control how they may respond to something. That's sort of one example of what might happen. Also in the book for older kids, we do a wonderful activity where we're asking young people the question, how do you know when you're stressed? And there is a whole list of things, from fast breathing to feeling jumpy to feeling their heart pounding fast to getting worried and afraid over little things, sort of the feeling like crying at any time, sort of noticing in the child that they really don't have a reserve they could go to. to sort of manage those distressing emotions.
And do we know where the primary sources of these stresses come from?
Well, as I mentioned in my book, we do know a little bit about that from a kids poll that surveyed lots of children across the United States. And interestingly enough, their top source of stress was grades, school, and homework. So the more we bring some of what we're talking about here today into classrooms, the better we are. But family comes in second for their source of stress, and friends and peers come in third. So it really varies, of course, from child to child, but it gives us a little bit of a sense of where their stresses are coming from today as they're growing up in today's world that's uncertain to begin with.
Right. So when you mention home, is it the parents not really present, undue stress on the kids? Is it that kind of stress?
Well, it's hard to know, actually. It's a good question, but it's actually hard to know. This survey by Kids Poll simply said family, and about 32% put that as their top source of stress. But clearly, I would imagine it's both in relationships as well as what they might be expected in terms of their home, and certainly, you know, what you mentioned of how many young people are facing empty homes, whether parents are affluent and they're staying too late at their jobs, or they're poor and they have two jobs, and so they don't see their children.
And this is a trend that's been going on for actually decades. I mean, I'm a latchkey kid. I mean, I went home to an empty home, mm-hmm. so I understand mm-hmm. the home part. But I was very blessed with having a great neighbor mm-hmm. who really was there for me if I needed someone. Yeah. But a lot of kids don't have that. A lot of times these days, that is something that is fighting that adult person to really be, you know, their standing ground and their supporter is
Absolutely.
Not always there these days, is it?
Absolutely. And, you know, the research tells us that that's still the most important thing that young people really need is someone in their court, that one caring adult, that one person, hopefully several, who really believes in their worth, you know, that sort of is there for them no matter what. And so many of our young people are not growing up that way today. We're not kind of raising our children, realizing that we all need to be part of that raising our children.
Right. Now, with this, it kind of comes up that family routine and rituals are very important in that respect, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's one way that there could be a real solidarity of connection for children. And, of course, it depends on what kinds of rituals and what kinds of routines. I mean, one of the things I talk about in building emotional intelligence is creating the kinds of rituals in homes that really give you that quiet time, that downtime, that special time with your child to begin to nurture what I would call the inner life, nurture the child's inside feelings and sense of worth and self.
Right. Now, what do you consider the true source of inner strength in a child?
Well, I think that another way of thinking about it is what is it that helps develop that source of inner strength? And I think it's a combination of things from still, I would say, the loving interaction of significant people who really care for that child is one incredible source of inner strength for children. But also, it's that they would have some resilience, that they would have been able to garner some of their own inner strength by some of the things that we could do to help them do that, to have those skills of coping that they could go to that clearly helps them develop that reservoir of inner strength.
So, in the book, you give a lot of different practices for having that bonding, that nurturing, by having that downtime, that quiet time in you.
Yeah.
You have a wonderful CD, and we will be playing a section of one of them later, a little bit later in the show. But I really want to understand the, if they don't have this, does it cause, you know, an undue stress that comes out in inappropriate behavior if they don't have that bonding?
Well, it's not only the bonding, but it's also having some of this inner strength and some real competencies to manage their distressing emotions. You know, the new brain science is teaching us a lot of things, and clearly one of the things it's teaching us is that the brain circuitry in young people depends a whole lot on what a child experiences day to day. And so the environmental influences on brain growth are very, very powerful. And we can shape some of that. We can create some of the stronger neural circuits when young people are nurtured, and also when they're given some concrete skills to calm down and to develop that inner strength we're talking about.
Right. It also builds some kind of... It builds on every level for the child to really succeed in life.
It sure does, definitely. But, you know, sometimes we don't realize what really is most important is not so much what we sort of put into the child in terms of what it is they need to learn, but the fact that when we've sort of exposed children to these various things, that they are then able to have the inner strength in a given moment and the resiliency to actually respond in those ways. And that depends on that core inside themselves, that core that really helps them manage life and successfully adapts to stressful situations and change. That ability to bounce back, for example.
Yes, it's a... What is resiliency then? Is it just the bouncing back?
Well, I think it's a little more than that. Certainly, we often describe resilience as that ability to bounce back to life experiences. And by the way, both positive ones and ones that are challenging. So it's not only about bouncing back from traumatic experiences. It's about really managing the flow of life, the mountains and the valleys, and being able to come to a place of balance about them. But I would say that as you continue to strengthen that inner core in yourself and in young people in general, we're talking even about going beyond just bouncing back. We're really talking about more reaching a potential that you might not even reach if you don't sort of pay attention a little more to your inner life.
Right. So is there a reason why some children have resilience and others don't? They just didn't get the support?
Well, I think that some of us come in with a little more of it than others, but clearly I think it's about what I mentioned, that it really is about a child's everyday experiences and how well-nurtured that child is, and then how much the people around them, particularly the adults, help them learn how to calm down. That they develop that strength in their brain circuitry for managing distress, that if they're not surrounded by young people, are not surrounded by this, then clearly they are more likely to not be very resilient.
So a lot of people would say, you know, life experience gave them that resilience. It wasn't distilled in them beforehand. Would you agree with that?
Well, I do and I don't. I think that we have various life experiences, but I think it has a whole lot to do with how we might move through that experience that makes it something that builds our resilience or, in fact, traumatizes us more. So I do think that the young people, for example, who had to run on the day of September 11th from their schools to safety, and there were over 5,000 young people that happened to,
right.
They have the potential of building a deepening resilience inside themselves, but not if the adults in their lives didn't intervene and really help them make sense out of that.
Right.
So I think it's both things, and I think that could have broken them as much as it could have built their resilience.
So, I mean, Now, what kind of help was given to those kids? I mean, I'm sure they got some kind of counseling because of the traumatic experience. Are people watching them and seeing how they're doing in school now?
Yes, there's lots of studies underway, and we used a lot of different approaches and realized that what we really needed to give children was, again, what I'm talking about here, this being able to build resilience inside of them so that they both felt the balance that they had been robbed of, but also that they would be prepared for life's uncertainties in general. And yes, some kids got counseling, but when you look at the large numbers, for example, of kids that were affected, it was really important to be wider about our thinking in terms of what are ways that young people and adults as well, by the way, could heal and recover. And they had a lot to do with coming in touch with their inner lives and strengthening that part of themselves that is resilient, that that can be nurtured.
Right. Now, in the book, you talk about the flight, fight, or freeze response. I take it this was kind of the situation with this. It's either it must have been overwhelming. And the other thing that popped in my head as you were speaking is the empathy from other children that must have happened from across the country, across the world, of thinking about these kids just
yes.
being put in there. And is there any signs that somebody should, a teacher or a parent, may be seeing now as a result of that in these children?
You mean, could you, so you're,
rephrase
you're asking
it a little
it,
bit. Seeing those kids being traumatized and going through that,
mm-hmm.
are you seeing across the country signs that it affected kids
I see what you mean.
Country?
I see what you mean. Again, we're not sure of that. I do know it certainly, when it was happening, we had lots of contact with children all over the country. And we had wonderful adults doing the right thing, which to me would be having the children, however far away they were, do something actively to respond with their care. And so we got many gifts in the mail during that time. And it was also very nurturing for the kids at our end as well, because they began to see how wide that circle of caring was for them. And it was very positive in both ways. In terms of whether we're seeing kinds of things in young people 6 years out, there's an interesting study that's being done right now on parents who were either pregnant or had very young children during that time. And that study is pointing to the fact that if the parent experienced several variables that were traumatic, they saw the towers come down, or they had to leave their homes, or they had to run on that day. There were about 10 different variables. And depending on how many some of the parents had, we are seeing some difficulties in their kids, who are now about 6 years old. So the thing we learn by that is that when tragedy happens, that we can assume that if a child is too young to tell us they need to be supported, we don't support them. Or we don't support the parents or the adults that are around a child who's very young, because kids pick it up regardless. They pick up our distress.
Yes. Yes, they do. So, with this, is it that's a really time to really wake up and see how the child is reacting and design like a quiet time or something to let the kid just get in touch with what's going on so in some way they can express it?
Well, yes. I mean, one of the things that I talk about in my book is sort of how important it is to have this kind of regular check-in with both our kids at home as well as what we're doing in schools. And I think that's really one of the best ways to do that, to sort of have a regularness about that. But then what I think the book offers is a way that parents could do that and can also have a guided practice with their child, because there's a CD that is connected with the book as well.
Yes, and in the book, the CD goes from the different age groups.
That's correct.
And is there a reason why you picked those ages that you picked for those certain exercises, the age groups?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with capacity for attention and focus. So before kids are 5 years old or so, it would be better to just be with them, you know, and to be with them in their play and in creative play or taking a walk or things that are natural to younger children, that we just would be fully present with them when it's happening. But as a child gets a little older, they're more able to actually focus their mind, to actually focus in on a CD. So that's part of why we began at five. And then the third age is 12 and up. We're really saying that, you know, up till teenagers really can use this.
And each one is slightly different. And I found it very interesting that you add challenges to the teenagers to keep them mentally really alert, as well as the mindfulness and being
yes.
present in their breath and where their mind is. And this book has a lot of good ways of getting kids, especially with all the ADD out there in the
mm-hmm.
school, to focus on one thing and keep their focus there.
Yep. Yep.
And there's so many things that are going on with the kids. It's overstimulation for the mind in many ways, and to be able to really bring them into that center.
It's so true.
It's wonderful for them in many ways, not
yeah.
just to, in those panic moments, to pull themselves in, but always stay in that center and not be pulled off so much.
Right. And when they experience being in that centered place, then they know how to return to it more easily, even when there's disruptive emotional impulses. So the interesting thing about the brain is that not only is the brain shaped by the experiences that we have during childhood, but the same area of the brain that inhibits these disruptive emotional impulses is also the part of the brain that helps you pay attention. So it's clearly important that if young people have strategies to decrease their anxiety, then there will be more attention they're able to pay to learning, to solving problems, to directions, to grasping new ideas, you name it. It becomes very different for a child to learn when they're not filled with anxiety and they know how to shift their attention and their mind.
Now, with this mindfulness, does it help with kids with learning disabilities who are dyslexic?
Mm-hmm.
Does it help them kind of incorporate and rearrange their brain a little bit so they're more, for lack of a different word, more normal?
Well, we're beginning to see that this work is equally useful with special needs youngsters. We have a study underway right now, and several teachers in the study are in classrooms in New York City with special needs youngsters. And some of the initial research, for example, was done with ADHD. So we're learning about this. We don't have all the answers to this, but clearly there seems to be some very promising ideas around this. And I was just in a classroom last week with several kids who had ADHD, some with Asperger's syndrome, a few kids with autism, and as the teacher was doing the fifth lesson, I said to the guest I was with, can you even tell who's who here, you know, with these labels? And no one could. They all had great attention. They all were learning how to free their minds from that impulsivity and distress. So they were in a best zone of learning. They were relaxed. They were calm. They were paying attention.
That's wonderful. So what does it mean to be paying attention, though?
Well, I think what it means is that in your brain's executive center, that you're able to pick out what it is you need to focus on for why you need to be doing that. And what happens, as I mentioned, is that when distress is high And because it's the same part of the brain that we're trying to access, then it's almost impossible for a child to actually put their focus on what they need to put their focus on. And if we can't focus, if we can't pay attention, if that role is not played by the mind, then we can access both short-term or long-term memory. And we've got to be able to do that to learn anything. We can't learn otherwise. So that's why there's such an interconnection here between impulsivity and distress and the fact that a child's mind is not in the best zone of learning when that happens.
So what are, with building and understanding that with the breathing techniques, can you explain some of the practices on the CD, and then we'll go ahead and we will play a little bit of one of the practices. Can you describe a little bit about what the practices are about?
Sure. There are two very simple practices. One of them is calming the body first through what's called a progressive muscle relaxation, where we bring kids through the different parts of the body as they tense it and then quickly relax. And therefore, it also calms the mind. And the second one is called a mindfulness exercise, where we focus more about where the mind is, where we are with our thoughts, our feelings, our sensations in the present moment without having a judgment about it, just noticing it. So in all age groups, we are focusing on those two relaxation and calming exercises.
Excellent. Now, can you tell us about whose voice this is and his connection with this book real quick?
Sure. This voice is Daniel Goleman, who is best known, although he's written so many more books since, for his landmark book in 1995 called Emotional Intelligence, where he gave us permission to really think about how the emotions are affecting our lives and how we could clearly begin to teach kids to be more equipped for life by teaching them some of the skills of emotional intelligence. So I would say he has done so much to move this work forward in both homes and schools across the country and really the world. And we've just been really privileged that he's been part of our journey in creating this book by being the voice on the CD.
And he also writes the intro, correct?
He does. He writes the intro as well, yes.
Okay, we're going to play one of the practices. It is the progressive muscle exercise, and it is for the middle ages. So for the next minute, we will be playing that exercise.
We're going to spend a little time together learning how to release stress from your body by focusing on different parts of the body, one part at a time. We'll practice tensing different muscles and then notice how it feels to relax each part as well. This helps to release some of the tension that may be in your body so you can feel even healthier and happier. So let's get ready to begin. Lie down comfortably on the floor on your back. You may want to loosen any clothing that you feel is too tight. Maybe take off your shoes and just begin to relax with your arms at your sides and your legs straight out in front of you. Now, gently close your eyes. Begin to take some slow, deep breaths. And remember, as you breathe in, feel your belly and chest rising. And as you breathe out, say to yourself, "Relax," as your belly goes down. Breathe in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and out. Relax, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and again in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and relax, and you let the air out, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, I just want to remind the listeners, you are listening to a pre-recorded program talking about the information of Lyndon Lanier,
Lanthier,
the building of emotional intelligence. It is a wonderful way of techniques that cultivate the inner strength in children. And we're talking more about that. You can also get more information about this book at www.soundstrue.com. They have a wonderful information, and you can also buy it on that website. What do you hope to get from this, getting this book out? What is your goal with this book?
Well, I think it's really, my goal is to help more and more adults realize that they can play a very important role in strengthening children's inner lives, and that hopefully these practical kinds of strategies will be able to help do that, that they have in their hands some tools that can make that a little easier for them to do.
So emotional intelligence, is there any basic things about them that people should know, basic competency, anything like that, that they should understand about it?
Sure. When we talk about emotional intelligence, we're talking about a whole set of skills that can be cultivated. And first of all, EQ, as we call it, emotional intelligence, is a little different from IQ in that EQ can continue to be developed and strengthened all throughout life, where IQ, we kind of come in with a certain IQ, and we may be able to teach to our different IQs a little differently and improve it a bit, but not quite like we could with EQ. So what are we talking about? Well, first we're talking about feelings of being able to be actually more self-aware, and that has to do with being able to identify your thoughts and your feelings, your strengths. Then it's being socially aware, you know, being able to tune into the thoughts and feelings of others and really, really being able to pick up some cues about what it is they're feeling. And that's where we're developing empathy, for example, being able to take the perspectives of others. And then the skills of self-management, where we're able to handle our emotions and really, really let them work for us rather than being out of control. And then there's things like responsible decision-making go into being emotionally intelligent, where we're able to really evaluate things as both adults and as children and make the right positive kind of decisions for ourselves, that we could consider even the long-term consequences of something, even though we might be making the decision in the present time. And then finally, there are the skills of what we call relational skills, the ability to say no, for example, to peer pressure, or being able to work to resolve conflicts in a healthy way without putting people down. So it's a variety of skills that are both inner, kind of yourself, mm-hmm. and outer with others.
Now, the peer pressure, that's a big deal these days.
It certainly is.
Especially with the drugs and the alcohol and wanting to fit in and to be able to say, I want to be your friend. I accept that's what you want to do. Please accept that's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is not always easy to do. And it reminds me of a story when I was in college, actually, and I did not go get drunk with everybody else. And somebody said they really respected the fact that I did hold mm-hmm. my own and didn't go out and drinking with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just amazed at how many of her friends were alcoholics. And they're like 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been alcoholics for years
mm-hmm.
because they gave in to the peer pressure. So
yeah.
It's good to have that self-confidence and the backbone to say no.
Well, exactly. And, you know, in the moment, if you don't already have it inside that reservoir of inner strength, then it would get very hard to be able to say no in that moment.
Definitely. So is there any way of, I mean, how do you prepare people to say it's okay to say no? Is there any examples of some of the lessons, or is it just being mindful of where you are, what you are doing, about your self-awareness and awareness of how other people are feeling?
I think it's really about having that reservoir, again, of inner strength, of knowing yourself, of being aware of what you feel, what it is you want, and then having sort of that so strong inside of you in terms of having adults help you build that inner resilience, that when that situation comes your way, you're able to handle it. What we also know through the work of teaching young people these skills in classrooms is that the more you can practice with young people what it is they might say in those situations, the better off they are, because then they not only have that inner strength, but they have the actual way that they might stay out of trouble when they're being asked to do something they don't want to be doing. They're able to have what's called in the literature refusal skills, where they're able to do what you described you did, because they did a little mini practice in a role play in a classroom or at home of what would happen if so-and-so asked you to do such and such, and
right.
to just role play and practice that, to almost be your child's emotional coach if you're the parent, or to be teaching that skill in the classroom.
So there is, okay, if they're being kind of pressured into this, and there is there a way of, I mean, people can really put a lot of pressure and stress on someone to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, you know, a learning way that actually is good to have that pressure on them to build the resiliency?
It's interesting. People ask that quite a bit. You know, I don't think you ever want to put more pressure on a child than should happen, you know.
Well,
but clearly, it's just the normal tests of life that this, in fact, happens to children and to all of us, that we have to sort of put our inner strength to the test. So I wouldn't say that it is something you should try to seek out, but I think that living in our world today, you just won't escape it. You
right.
know, you won't escape having the challenges of being able to have to ask your inside self what it is you want to do in this circumstance. I think we have lots of opportunities for that.
Oh, most definitely. Especially, and it does, if you're able to do it as a child, to stand up for yourself, further down the line as an adult, you can handle it even stronger than when you're a kid. And I have to admit that I learn more from the kids around me that I interact, how strong they are getting these days.
Yeah.
And it is amazing. I have 7 nephews, and they always blow me away how strong they are.
Mm-hmm. In what way are you thinking?
I'm sorry?
In what way are you thinking when you say
it's
how strong
just,
they are?
They're standing up for what they want to do.
Got
and
it.
Following their dreams.
Beautiful.
And it's just awesome. All my nephews are very, very much doing what they're doing. And it's also interesting to see how they are affecting their kids. I have some nephews that actually have kids.
Wow.
And it's interesting that they're learning from their parents' experience and getting even stronger to stand up for themselves.
That's beautiful.
So it's just building.
Right.
But they definitely have been influenced by their parents and where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to interact with my nephews and even kids that live on the block that I'm on, how much they really know who and what they are.
Yeah.
And it's just awesome. The amount of, I just thank the parents every time I see a kid that's really strong and said, thank you for
exactly.
taking time to really do that.
Exactly, because it does require that. It does require that safety net around kids for kids to turn out in that way, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it's good to see it happening. So what are the other things in the book that you really want to look at and stress? This book is like jam-packed of great information, and it's almost so positive in helping kids of all different ages and parents to really understand the different ways of getting them to do the deep breathing and understanding the practices. And is there any other part of this that you want to point out that I haven't pointed on?
Well, thank you for asking. I would simply say that it's easy to use, and I would encourage the listeners whether they are parents, grandparents, as in your case, aunts or uncles, that this is a wonderful book to give an idea of how you could spend some really quality time with the children you love. And so I know that I tell this story in my book that I was in my early 20s when I came in one day to visit my mom, and I had left home already, and she explained to me that she had an appointment for both of us to learn how to meditate. And I was kind of surprised. She was a good Christian woman and didn't know exactly what this was about, but sort of went on with her for the adventure of it all. And she meditated every day till the day she died, and so do I. And it was a gift that I would say was a huge gift that sustained me throughout many, many things in my life. And I feel it's like a regular savings account I put into every day for the times that I need to draw on that resilience. So giving children this skill and these sets of strategies, really helping them become their own best friend, so to speak, is a huge thing to be giving people we love, especially children. And my hope is that the book makes that possible and easier for many, many people.
Well, reading the book definitely gave me a lot of insights and a lot of wonderful tools to reconnect with, even with myself. And I do meditate, but it was nice to see it in this way to help just understand different ways of helping children and the inner child within me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, let's reiterate and just go over one more time what the basic skills this book emphasizes on.
Well, again, I would say that it's really a clear way of strengthening what we talked about, building emotional intelligence, which has to do with knowing and being aware of yourself and managing those feelings, and also being aware of what others are feeling. And in taking this heart and soul time, this designated quiet time with children, what we can do is really, really be able to strengthen that part of children that we call emotional intelligence. And why does it strengthen that part? Well, because it's strengthening those neural pathways in the brain that are helping children to calm down, to have less impulsivity, and be more in that zone of learning. And as a result, they're able to be calmer and more relaxed when they're doing anything of their life. So it isn't only about having that special time in a quiet time that a teacher might expose her group of children to, or a parent might have with their child, but it's having that quiet time so that also in regular living and daily life, young people have some skills they can draw on that really, really help them through some of the challenges and opportunities that life may throw them. I think that's the big one as well.
Yes, most definitely. You end your book with a wonderful invocation, and I was wondering if you wouldn't mind reading it.
Sure, I would love to. I would first like to say that it was written not by me, but by a wonderful teacher, Angelus Arian, who is a cultural anthropologist and has done so, so much to nurture my own inner life, and has also nurtured many, many children's inner life. And it's actually called Invocation for Children. And it goes this way. May you be powerfully loving and lovingly powerful. May you always have love be your guide with family, friends, and colleagues. Remember to listen carefully to your own heart and to the heart of others. May you have the courage to always follow your dreams. Take an action every day to support your life dream, your love of nature, and your integrity. May you have the strength to overcome fear and pride and instead follow what has heart and meaning for you. May you be guardians of truth, beauty, creativity, and laughter. May you protect, preserve, and care for nature in the wilderness. May you show respect to people of all ages and help all living things keep their dignity. May you help to make a better world for the poor, the sick, the elderly, and the young by being an active, committed, and positive force for your community. May you value and maintain your health and the health and well-being of others. May you respect all the ways human beings access their spirituality. May you help create a global community committed to peace and nonviolence. May you keep learning, ask questions, explore, discover, and always maintain curiosity and hope. May you honor and respect diversity and the beauty and magic that occurs when differences join to create something far greater than anyone could ever imagine. May you bring your gifts and talents forward every day without hesitation or reservation. May you honor your ancestors and all those who have gone before you, for they have paved the way for you to do what you are here to do. By Angela Therrien.
Thank you very much, Linda, for being on the show. It is an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show and continue your wonderful work, because you're helping the future of humanity in many, many ways. And with that, I do want to highly recommend that you get a copy of the book, Building Emotional Intelligence, Techniques to Cultivate the Inner Strength in Children. And you can get more information, again, on Linda's work on www.casel.org, and also more information about the book on www.soundstrue.com. This is Jennifer Hellman. Until next week, with each breath of air, we hope that you gain new insights and inspiration. Many blessings and good night.